Welcome to the second episode of the Little House Book Club. This is part two of Little House in the Big Woods.
Maybe Annie might want to do some of the fan fiction stuff.
Sure, let me just get on that.
Here you go.
The next chapter is Sundays. It starts off with every Sunday Mary and Laura were dressed from their skin out in their best clothes. And I thought that was a weird way of putting it. It makes sense, but I guess it means that their best clothes, even their undergarments, everything is their best.
Well, and they had just been washed.
Yeah, so that was a pretty long process, but do you want to talk about that process, Annie?
Well, they would have to go get snow, and then, again, they don't talk about wash and carry, but Laura would get to go first, and she would be bathed.
She was the dirtiest, I think.
Yes, probably. She would go to bed on Saturday nights with Charlotte because she was bathed. And then they'd have to go get more snow for Mary. And then she would get cleaned and be put to bed. And then Ma would take her bath and Pa would take his.
It sounds like a big process. I mean, of course, it's necessary. It's just, again, we've come so far.
I've always heard that they heated it up and then it went oldest to youngest to get clean, and they never got fresh water. But
I've heard things like that. Well, here's the thing. If you get a ton of snow and melt it down, only a fraction of it's water.
Right.
And snow isn't necessarily clean. You know, if you take snow or, you know, snow that's been on the ground for a little while, I mean, unless it's really fresh snow, it kind of has some stuff in it. It's kind of gross. But, you know, I guess you use what you have. It's cleaner than not being clean.
Yeah.
I would also imagine it would take a long time to heat it.
Right, and to make it warm enough to sit in it.
You can't exactly, scrub while it's boiling. You know? But Sundays are strict. Ma would read Bible stories and they would just listen. Mary was not allowed to sew on her 9-patch quilt. Laura could not sew clothing on Charlotte. Nothing. No yelling.
Pins.
You just shut up. Ma would read from...
At their paper dolls, but they couldn't make anything new for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty strict, but Ma would read from the wonders of the animal world and talk about things like white bears, which were polar bears, and read from Pa's Big Green Book. I went down this rabbit hole about the Big Green Book, and I found a copy of it. Google, like it's been digitized. It's like 800 pages.
Wow.
And it's a really interesting book. It's a really phenomenal book. And I have to wonder why Pa had it. To have this book, you really have to be the type of person who really kind of genuinely cares about your family's education. Because, this really does touch upon so much. And so maybe there are more connections. Maybe there really is a correlation between the Pa that we see on television and the Pa, the real Charles Ingalls. Maybe he was like a real genuine, wonderful family man who genuinely cared about his family's well-being and education. This doesn't seem to be so common for the time. Also, not being the most educated of people either. They talk about the Bible stories. I thought it was really funny. They talk about Adam, how he only wore skins, and how they were talking about how he named the animals. Laura wished that she could only wear skins.
No, I was going to say, it did kind of surprise me. I feel like most families at that time would have just read from the Bible. That was their stories. So, like,
right,
you
don't deviate from.
No, I was very surprised, like you, to see that Pa, that they would read these world stories. Anyway.
It's out there, too, the book.
Yeah,
I'll send you guys a link to it. It's, and they're all, the photos are actually kind of amazing, and they show, like, shipwrecks, and they talk about really exciting things. And
it's really neat that they did that, like you said.
Oh, sorry. I think to touch on what you were saying about, like, Pa kind of, having this literature, I feel like from what Laura writes, like, he truly was in love with his wife. And she seemed to be one to always want to push to have her girls educated. She was a teacher. She loved her children to be a teachers, or at least one of them. And I think maybe he, purchased this, like, when he saw an opportunity, when they were financially able to do it, and just thought that that would be kind of like something that she would want for her children, and that maybe that's part of that.
I tried to find a price on it. I went through my Sears Roebuck catalog from the 19th century, and I could not find it in there among the books. Found similar books, but not this one. But, they're out there. You can buy copies of it, and they go for several hundred dollars. And it's really interesting. The Big Green Book. But at one point, Laura lost it. She, in my opinion, she just needed to be a kid. She started yelling and crying, and I just loved it. This would be me. She said she hates Sundays. And it was like, what? How dare you hate Sunday?
Been there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they're also indoors. I mean, this is all taking place, we're assuming anyway, during winter. So they're cooped up anyway. And it's like, why are we even dressed?
In our fanciest. I mean, she's five.
Yeah, that's it.
She's four this time.
Oh, right. Yeah, she's four. Yeah. You're right.
But we don't want to, you know, there's so many restrictions. And it's so tough to be, you know, a kid during this time. And Pa kind of understands and tells them a story about their grandfather. Grandpa had, it was Grandpa, which I don't know what Grandpa's name was. Do you guys? Hi, Peter. But he has two brothers, James and George. And he tells the story about Sled and the Pig. But the thing is that in Grandpa's days, Sundays really began at sundown on Saturday night. It was like Shabbos for Jews, except shifted a day forward. When it was sundown on Saturday night, that is when it's a holy day, I guess. But it would be until sundown, I guess, on Sunday, right? So it would just be 24 hours of complete calm and down. You know, it's a very solemn period of time. And it was no work, no play, and they had to all sit still while their father read from chapters of the Bible. There was no talking, laughing, or anything. Breakfast was cold. They couldn't even cook. And this is the way it is in during Shabbos as well, except with the modern world, people leave the oven running at a very low temperature, believe it or not. They have to go to church, and church is like 2 hours long. There's no fidgeting. They just have to stare forward. They can't look at the walls. They can't look at the ceiling. I feel like this is another thing where it's like a dad saying, this is how it was when I was a kid, or this is how it was when your grandfather was a kid. I don't think anything was this strict. I mean, I'm sure it was strict, but this was kind of going overboard.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
I'm not really sure what religion they were. I'm assuming some type of Catholicism or Christianity. But yeah, even the dinner would be cold, and it just seemed miserable, to be honest with you. It wasn't very enjoyable. So Grandpa and his brothers decided to make one huge sled one winter. And there was an amazing place where they could go sledding. But the thing is that you can't work on your sled, and you certainly can't ride on your sled during this period of rest. So they finished it just before the sun went down on Saturday, and they were just so bummed out because on Sunday it ended up that it was a perfect day for sledding. And I guess, you know, in the 1800s, I mean, your entertainment is what's in front of you. So you're looking at this perfect day for it, and it's just, we got to read the Bible.
I want to go play.
Yeah. And so they're sitting around, and they notice that their father kind of dozes off. And so they decide what they're going to do. They're going to get the sled. They're going to sneak out as quietly as possible. They're going to go once. Just once.
Just once.
So they go flying down the hill. They're cruising down the hill. Out of nowhere, a huge hog just was in the way who fell onto the thing with them. It's a beautifully illustrated design. I posted on Facebook last night. I was just laughing so much about it. And yes. And I just pictured the hog squealing so loud and everything. That was the way it was described, is that the hog is squealing. Everybody who lives around, if there are any neighbors, everybody's being as quiet as possible. And then you hear in the distance this hog squealing, and you have to guess, like, maybe even they were screaming a little bit at this point, because they're like, what, you know, what's going on? So they finally stop. The hog goes running off. They can't even bring the hog home, I guess, and say, look, we brought home bacon. but they put the sled away. They go home, and they finish their catechism. Catechism, I think, is Catholicism. So it's a form of Catholic. So they went home. After the sun went down, Pa tanned their hides. Or what? Do you remember how it was said? Tan their jackets, I think?
Yes. Their jackets.
So, of course, this is a wonderful, entertaining moment for the girls to hear about their grandfather. Laura says, well, what about for girls? And Ma explains that it was even harder for girls. And it probably was, because they weren't even allowed to do a lot of the, like, more casual things. They had to, like, prepare everything. unfortunately.
Well, it said like little girls could never even ride down on the sled. Like the
on a regular Saturday.
Yeah. Love this story. I'm literally thinking, like picturing these three boys, like they're so excited. Their dad's falling asleep. Like they're like, we're going to go get this done. And what are the odds of them scooping up a hog? Like it's just.
Yeah,
it just makes me chuckle. I love this story in the book. I love it.
Well, and I love how their father was standing in the doorway,
right, right,
watching them. And then when they came back in the house, he was reading his Bible.
Yeah, he'd gone back to.
Those are the worst punishments when it's just silent and you know it's coming.
And it did.
Pa finishes off with a song. I don't know what the title of the song is.
Rock of Ages.
Yeah, is that what it was? I know he's at Rock of Ages, and I'm like, isn't that a musical or something?
It is, but it's very different from the hymn.
Yeah, I would imagine. But yeah, he sings the thing. I have a little, all the songs that are sung in the book, I kind of found either 78 of them, or I found some versions of them that I'll put into the show notes. But then we learn that this is all happening in the beginning of February because we learn it's Laura's birthday. It's like, what? I don't even know how that, it wasn't even transitioned very well. In the book.
Getting spankings.
Yeah. It's like, you have to get spankings for your birthday or you're not going to grow. I share a birthday with Laura, so I know what it's like to have a winter birthday. I thought that the spanking thing was cute. Gets the most gentle spankings. You get 5 spankings and a 6th one for to grow up, I think. I forget what it was.
Yeah, I feel like that happened when I was a kid. Like, they called it, like, your birthday wax or whatever. And...
Well, I remember birthday punches, yeah. Jeez, what a violent...
Yeah, what a weird time. Tradition.
It was time to give gifts to Laura. I don't know, JJ, do you want to talk about who gave what?
Yeah, it said that Pa gave her a little wooden man he'd whittled out of a stick to be a company for Charlotte. So she had a friend. Ma gave her 5 little cakes, mm-hmm. one for each year that Laura had lived with her and Pa. And Mary gave her a new dress for Charlotte. Mary had made the dress herself while Laura thought she was sewing on her quilt.
I think these are decent gifts. Right? The cakes were likely shortbread or sugar cookie material. So, you know, they were yummy. They were made by Ma. They probably had a lot of beer lard in it. Or beer fat.
Beer lard and love.
Beer lard and love. It sounds like a beer or something.
Can really taste the beer, Ma.
Oh, look, this one has a whisker in it.
Oh, ew.
We do get a really cute song from Pa. We get Pop Goes the Weasel. Not so much a cute song, more of a disturbing song. But I thought it was cute because he makes a little bit of a trick while plucking, and he tricks them.
Is he popping the string? Because that's how I couldn't quite figure it out.
String on his finger with his finger, but they can't see him do it. So he's trying to get them to watch.
I feel like they're making him look at one of his hands and not the other. Like, maybe he's fretting it with his left hand, and he's plucking it with his right, because he would normally be holding the bow. They don't expect him to pluck it. Pa has a lot of mysterious things with this plucking. Now, this chapter, of course, ends on a very controversial note about an Uncle Ned who's not related to anybody in this book. I recommend everybody go and listen to it. I'm putting a link to the version that is in the book from, I believe, 1927 from a 78. There's a reference that refers to African Americans in a very non-flattering way. It was referred to as a less racist way, being that the original song used the N-word instead of this word. And I do recommend everybody go and read about it and listen to it. Maybe instead of hiding it, maybe being scared of it, maybe have a little bit of a discussion about it instead. That's all. But moving on to the two big bears.
Chapter 6,
the two big bears. Snow is beginning to thaw, and there is excitement in this chapter for once. Pa said he must go to town to trade the furs of the wild animals he had been trapping all winter. So one evening, he made a big bundle of them. There were so many furs that when they were packed tightly and tied together, they made a bundle almost as big as Pa. Very early one morning, Pa strapped the bundle of furs on his shoulders and started to walk to town. There were so many furs to carry that he could not take his gun. Ma was worried, but Pa said that by starting out before sunup and walking very fast all day, he could get home again before dark. And I thought about this. If he leaves at 4 a.m. and is shooting to be back by 7 p.m., we're talking about 14 to 15 hours. And at 3 miles per hour, we're looking 20 to 25 miles each way of walking with a 2 hour period of trade time. That's kind of what I allocated. That's a day. You know, that's a lot of work. And I'm going to guess this stuff had to have weighed quite a bit. And it sounds like he literally carried it.
Why he didn't take a wagon? Was the roads too mushy from like all the winter?
Or... I don't think they even had roads, really. Oh, no, they had. I don't know.
I mean, they had wagon trails.
The sled came, yeah.
There was snow, though. Maybe it was, you know, the snow was beginning to thaw from what I
And
understand.
I can't believe he would go without a gun after he, like, preaches that story about Grandpa and the Panther.
Yeah, this just doesn't seem well thought out.
Nope.
But Mary and Laura had never seen a town or two houses even standing together or a store. At the time, I have this great document that I'll share. How much stuff cost back? Store sugar, for instance, was 10 cents a pound. I'll take a pound and a half, pound and a quarter. But he would go there and trade furs for goods. And this is essentially what he did for his family. He was not a farmer at this point. I mean, he was a trader. It's a big misconception at this point.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, everybody talks about Pa as being the farmer.
Yeah, he hunted, he fished, and he traded.
Time went on, and it was getting darker and darker. They were watching for Pa, but he did not come. They were even milking the cow by lantern. That poor cow in those cold hands. This is what's weird. So they bring a lantern out to milk the cow, and they have a candle in the lantern. How come they don't have a kerosene lamp? Is there a reason why it was a candle?
Well, I mean, it was a tin with a candle inside, and I would imagine if she'd drop it, it wouldn't break like a glass kerosene lamp.
Was she dropping them often?
It was a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old.
Whoa, carrying it.
Yeah.
I guess it's a good point. I guess candles were safer. Her description of walking out, it was almost like Laura had never left the house at nighttime.
I get that feeling she didn't.
Yeah, maybe. It was very picturesque and very creepy, talking about the shadows and how just the way the light was sparkling off of the snow. And apparently Suki, you know, they did, I guess, name this cow Suki as well. Suki was a free pasture cow. Very fancy. It's like Japanese level.
So they see in this light, in the dark, this shape that they assume is their cow Suki, and they go up to the gate. They can't get the gate pushed because the cow's standing up against it, and Ma's just not having it. I'm sure she's stressed. Pa's not home, and so she just smacks the cow and, "Suki, get over here!" And
yeah,
trying to get it to move, when all of a sudden Laura saw long shaggy black fur and two little glittering eyes.
Yeah.
And Ma said, "Laura, walk back to the house."
That's not Suki.
No, it was a bear.
I love Ma kept her cool. I mean,
Ma kept her cool.
I loved it. I love the way it was written, and I can almost hear in my head Karen Grassley saying it.
Yes, like, yes.
Laura, go back into the house now. You know, like, yeah, like, Laura, walk back to the house. I also like how Laura just turned around and did it. Like, there was no, like, why, Mom? What's going on? Like Melissa Gilbert Laura would do.
Right. Yes, yes. Question.
Yeah, like, why?
Laura. Yeah, and then, like, they get going, and then, like, Ma, like, scoops her up, and they, like, you know, run to the house once they get a little bit away from it.
Yeah, and Laura says, "Ma, was it a bear?" And she says, "Yes, Laura, it was a bear." Laura began to cry. She hung on to Ma and sobbed, "Oh, will he eat Suki before we can?" No. No, they didn't say that. And Ma said no, hugging her. "No, you don't need a dairy cow." I don't think you do. I mean, I guess you use it. I don't even want to know. So Suki's safe in the barn, which is kind of great. She says, "Think, Laura. All these big, heavy logs in the barn walls, and the door is heavy and solid. It's made to keep bears out. No, the bear cannot get in and eat Suki." This line is almost to convince Ma more than it is to convince Laura.
Because I'm like, well, the bear did get in. Like, the bear was in the gate.
I love the line where it said Ma was trembling and she began to laugh a little. "To think," she said, "I've slapped a bear." You know, it's one of those kind of things like, wow. I cannot believe this is happening right now. This is the most exciting thing to ever happen. And, you know, we don't even have TV. So then she just, I don't know, she calmed down somehow and she put supper on the table. Pa still has not come home yet. I mean, it's got to be very scary to be a wife. This dynamic between the husband and wife and the children, you know, Ma's got to be cool and collected, but she's got to be petrified, because if Pa comes home, there's a bear out there and he's going to like kill him. I mean, this isn't even like, you can't like call him up. You can't send him a text.
You can't send him a text. That's what I thought. Oh, text Pa and tell him there's a bear.
Yeah, it's crazy. Ma just said, "Go to bed. Pa will be back when you wake up, he'll be back in the morning. But, you know, that was probably I don't know when he came home, but he did come home. But if he came home late, you know, that mom must have been just petrified every moment. You know, we worry about our loved ones so much. I think, especially during this period of time, you're so alone. You might have your in-laws 20 miles away or whatever they are. You know, this is like you're really secluded and really open to invite any type of problems. So I got this kind of feeling of how courageous the mother is in this and how she really kept it together. I think she's really admirable for that. Pa did come home and he brought candy for Mary and Laura and two pieces of very pretty calico, which I think is material. Mary got they both got a lot of stuff. Let's just leave it at that. He was able to get a very good price and they were so happy and they checked on Suki and the horses and everybody was fine, which is just so sweet. And this brings us to the story of Pa and the Bear in the Way as we get to hour 15 of the book. What are we, like 6 pages into the book?
Funny, because I read this book when in class and they actually had me illustrate this story. He made it to town and was busy and it took a while for them to look at his furs and then he had to bargain the price and things. So it delayed him.
He was not the Charles Ingalls of Walnut Grove. I mean, Nels would not make him wait.
No, of course not. So he tried to hurry walking back, trying to get home before sundown. It was nearly sundown before he could start home. So he was walking in the dark. He said there was about 6 miles left in the walk. It was getting darker and darker and darker, and he really was wishing he had his gun because he knew that the bears were out of their winter dens. They were hungry. It wasn't going to be good if he came up across the bear. So in his mind, he is thinking, I am going to be face-to-face with a bear. So then he is walking through the path his way. He sees a bear. It's standing up on its hind legs, looking at him. He says he could see his pig snout, and he sees one of his claws in the starlight, just fearful because he has nothing. He has nothing to defend himself against a bear.
No.
And he's wishing for his gun. I think he's just staring. He said that there's like a staring thing. And then, so he's having to pass the bear so he can get home. So he didn't move. And basically, I think he just starts to fish around for like something or look around for something to use. And he finds like a big kind of tree, part of a tree limb. And he just decides to just go at it with the tree limb. And then once he connects, he realizes it's an old stump of a tree, like a burned, blackened tree stump, you know, much to his relief. It was not a bear. But you know, I can imagine that was very scary, but very relieving.
Yeah, like also humorous. Yes. You mean it wasn't even a bear?
Well, I have something very similar like that happen to myself or my grandmother. My grandfather actually had a big mound of dirt with a black tarp over it and a shovel sticking up straight. The tarp had blown over when the wind, and my grandma looked out the window and she said she swore she thought she saw the Grim Reaper.
Oh my God.
But it was just a tarp.
It was just a tarp. Yep.
Like you said, I mean, he was convinced. He basically convinced himself he was going to see a bear. So when that stuff came up, it was like, okay, is it. I knew it. I knew it. I got my gun.
And then it went to bedtime, and we got like your standard prayer, the lay me down to sleep. I don't know if you guys did prayers. It seemed to be a sweet thing to do. Is that we get this song. I'm sorry, go on.
We say this prayer every night.
Do you really?
Except my kids got scared of the if I should die before I wake. So we have to say, your love be with me through the night until I see the morning light.
I think it's a nice thing. I think it's a nice idea and it's a nice thing to kind of close the day with. We also get this song. I looked into the lyrics of it. He just plays the chorus of it. The birds were singing in the morning and the myrtle and the ivy were in bloom and the center of the hills was a dawning. 'Twas then that I laid her in the tomb. And it's a really sad song about the death of a girl, a woman named Kitty Wells. The name of the song is Sweet Kitty Wells. I have a recording from 1929 that I'll put up link to. But it's a very sweet song, but it's a very sad song. I just don't know why he would choose, why that song was chosen.
He was whistling cheerfully right before he sang it. So yeah. It seems like an odd segue.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. But that's kind of how we end the whole thing. They were saying it was a warm night.
It was a warm night. The fire had gone to coals on the hearth, and Pa did not build it up again. All around the little house in the big woods, there were little sounds of falling snow, and from the eaves there was a drip, drip of the melting icicles. In just a little while, the trees would be putting out their baby leaves, all rosy and yellow and pale green, and there would be wildflowers and birds in the woods. Then there would be no more stories by the fire at night, but all day long, Laura and Mary would run and play among the trees, for it would be spring.
I think that each chapter ends on these kind of notes where I don't like to say that, you know, Rose Wilder has her fingerprints all over this book, but I really do think she does. I think that the way they finish off each chapter, it has like this poetic touch. Do you guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
It's really written by a different person. That's the way it feels to me. So I don't know if that's Rose's input or Laura Ingalls Wilder's him. Either way, it's definitely, there are some parts of this that are written at such a visual viewpoint, and then other parts are just not nearly as descriptive. It's more emotional. Regardless of who put the input into it, I do love the story to this point. And that's where we end this particular episode.
Getting ready for spring.
Getting ready for spring. Just like we all are, actually.
Yes.
I want to thank all of you for taking the time to do this. I'm really glad that we had the opportunity to do this. I thought this was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. It was very much, very fun.
One thing I did want to mention, I do have this two little quick notes, is that slavery ended only 4 years before Laura was even born. So, you know, the nation was still going through a very turbulent transition, and racism was, you know, it wasn't even racism. It was just the way people were. So When people do look at the way people are approaching a lot of things, just remember how new of a concept it was to have free men, you know. So I think that's an important thing to just kind of remember. And another thing to note is I can't recommend Annette Whipple's book more. She wrote the Laura Ingalls Wilder Companion. She has crafts, recipes, and discussions about each of the Laura Ingalls Wilder books. And her book is, you know, it's really just so thoughtful and fun. And it's a real great companion to read with the books. And she has segments called, like, Live Like Laura, and with just amazing crafts and recipes like homemade butter and making paper dolls. She shows you how to make the clove apple and snow candy and all types of really cool stuff. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But you can pick that up on Amazon. But the Laura Ingalls Wilder Companion, it's a great gift for everyone. And that's it. I don't know if you guys wanted to say anything else, but I just wanted to say to Annie, JJ, and Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
My pleasure. I love this.
Great.
And next time, I just think we'll smooth it out. Everything will just be better.
Yeah.
Or not. I had a good time. But
it's fun.
If you guys could just stay on the line for a moment.